Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And now we welcome into the Keystone Kickoff Show, Victor Matheson, PhD professor of economics at Holy Cross College and an expert in sports economics. We appreciate you coming on the show, Professor, and that is despite you being a Minnesota Golden Gopher fan.
Well, I'm really more surprised that you would have me on after the beating that Minnesota gave Penn State last year.
That's really how you want to start this thing?
Yeah, it's not like I could have said that just about any season over the last 30, so I got to get that one in while I can.
Fair enough. And it was a very impressive performance by your Golden Gophers. But we got back a little bit by stealing your offensive coordinator, Kirk Ciarrocca. Before we get going on what we have you here to talk about, your quick scouting report on Kirk Ciarrocca and what we're getting as an offensive coordinator.
Well, obviously, a most successful season in Minnesota football history in what, at least 25 years or so. I lived in Minnesota in the 80s and 90s, and you know, since that point, there's been little to cheer about in Minnesota other than hockey. So the fact that he was able to bring Minnesota in the way he was, that must be some decent coaching talent there to do that. Because again, Minnesota powerhouse in the 1940s, couple national titles back then, but not a whole lot of success since then. So hats off to whatever the coaching staff did last year. And it looks like you're getting pretty quality guy there.
I think so, too. All right. Let's get to your real area of expertise, which is the economic impact of major sporting events on the community. Can you just give our listeners an overview of exactly what that means?
Sure. So if we take a look at things like, you know, the Boston Red Sox or Penn State football or things like the Super Bowl or the Olympics, often these things have significant public subsidies associated with them. And what economists want to know is, do you get a good deal out of that? You know, so to what extent should we be supporting things, big events like, again, the Super Bowl, like the World Cup, like the Olympics? To what extent should we be building new facilities for professional sports franchises? If we look at Pennsylvania, we have a whole slew of new facilities in both Pittsburgh and in Philadelphia, built with huge amounts of public money. And the question is whether those are good uses of public funds. So economists like me, we go and we look at any sort of economic data we can find, things like hotel stays or taxable sales or employment or GDP figures, and we try to see whether we can tease out any impact from big sporting events on local economies.
Well, in that area, I know there's been a lot of studies, and I'm sure that you've often come to the conclusion that a large event like a building a new stadium with public money or bringing the Olympics into a city is not the panacea that sometimes politicians would like to make it. But in our situation that we have here, Penn State, along with the other schools of the Big Ten, especially in the smaller communities like State College, as opposed to, say, Columbus, Ohio, or Chicago, the canceling of a football season, I would think, would have major economic impact on the community.
Yeah, so you make a really great point there. One of the problems that economists have trying to identify these economic impacts is, as it turns out, sports really isn't as big as we think they are. And therefore, when we're trying to tease out an economic impact, it's often like looking for a needle in a haystack. But one of the ways to find a needle in a haystack easier is if you can make the haystack smaller. So if we're looking for economic impact of a big event like a college football game that draws 90,000 fans into a stadium, it's a lot easier to find that in a place like State College, in a place like Madison, Wisconsin, in a place like Lincoln, Nebraska, than it is in a place like the Meadowlands, New Jersey, or in Los Angeles, or in Philadelphia. So my colleagues and I have gone back and we've looked at Power 5 conference football games, and to see whether we can actually tease out any sort of big economic impact that occurs in those towns. And again, the advantage of that is Power Five college football is much more likely to occur in small locations where the haystack is smaller, as opposed to NFL games, for example, which almost, you know, and over the entire country, with the exception of a place like Green Bay, are occurring in huge cities. So we've taken a look at that. And when we have, what we found is a home football game actually isn't quite as big as you might guess, but it turns out to be about a $2 million impact on local economies for every home football game in a Power Five conference. And $2 million can be big money for a place like State College, an economy that isn't that big to begin with.
Well, yes, I would think it would be a lot more critical to State College than to, say, Philadelphia. And it's, again, it's hard for the layperson to understand the context of $2 million in State College. But let me ask you it this way. And I don't know if you would know this, something like what we're going through now with COVID has already probably, well, I won't say probably, I say I know it has already had an effect on the economy of State College. There are businesses that have shut down permanently. There are businesses that are very much hurting because of COVID. What is the effect of that? And so how much more does this additional pain of losing football cause?
Yeah, so a lot of things to disentangle there, right? So one important thing is to just put football into context of the larger Penn State system. So the Penn State athletic program generates about $165 million a year for the Penn State University system. That is a large amount of money, and almost all of that is being generated by Penn State football. Obviously, there's a little bit of basketball money there. There's a little bit of hockey money. There's some other things there. But the vast majority of that $165 million is being generated by the football program. So that $165 million includes about $40 million of ticket sales. Again, that's almost all football. It includes about $30 million of contributions. That is largely money that's contributed by people who want to buy season tickets, right? There's about $75 million.
Oh, yeah.
We know about that, obviously. There's about $75 million of rights and licensing. So those are the TV and media rights, as well as, you know, the official sponsorship stuff for Penn State. But again, the reason you get to sell that for so much money is putting the Penn State football team on TV. And then there's about $15 million of other stuff. But even that includes stuff like concessions and parking. So you add that all up and you get $165 million, almost all of which is Penn State football. That being said, the entire budget for the Penn State University system is about $7 billion. So $165 million is a lot, but simultaneously, it's not very much. It's only about 2.5% of the entire budget of the Penn State University system. So again, sports is one of these weird things that's simultaneously big, but small. So again, no one is going to say that $165 million isn't a big deal, but it's small compared to the $7 billion that is spent throughout the state of Pennsylvania on the general system overall. Same thing kind of happens when you think about individual football games. You know, I threw out a number like there of $2 million for a football game. And you must be saying there's 100,000 people in the stadium and there's all these parties and everything going on that day. How can it only be $2 million? Well, part of the reason that it's only $2 million is that if the football games weren't there, people at Penn State would be partying anyway, and they'd be eating food and they'd be meeting with friends and they'd be spending money elsewhere in the local economy. So while it's no doubt that football games are associated with a lot of economic activity, it's also true that those people, if they weren't at the football game, would still be spending money in the local economy. So we talk about businesses, you know, going out of business in State College. It's going to hurt those businesses that they don't have 7 or 8 really good day Saturdays every year where there's a ton of people in town. What the much bigger worry for all those firms is not the 7 or 8 football days. It's the worry that Penn State will go the same direction as UNC and Holy Cross, my institution, and cancel classes, in-person classes completely. You know, you send 20,000 students home who go out every day, eat food every day, interact in the local economy every day for an entire 2 semesters. That's a lot bigger economic impact than what happens in 7 or 8 Saturdays throughout the fall.
Well, one thing on the $2 million number, and I assume you know better than I do and go into it, I know my listeners will ask this. Do you take into account how they gouge you at the hotels? All of a sudden, a $100 room becomes $600, $700, $800 with a 2-night minimum.
No, so that's a great point. What we were taking a look at in our numbers that found a $2 million impact was total sales at a commercial institution. So that would include hotels. There's a couple reasons why, again, this number is smaller than a lot of people might expect. One is that to the extent that hotels and motels are nationally owned rather than locally owned, money that pours into those hotels is money that is spent in State College but doesn't stick in State College. So, you know, typically, you know, like 70 cents of every dollar you spend at a hotel is spent locally by paying local suppliers, local contractors, and local workers. But when you double or triple or quadruple those hotel room prices, you don't simultaneously double, triple, or quadruple the wages you're paying to your local employees. And so all that money that's coming in is a windfall to the owners of the hotel. And if those owners aren't local owners, then that's money, again, that is being spent in the city that isn't sticking in the city in any significant way. So all of that economic benefit goes back to corporate stockholders back in New York City. It's not actually accruing to the people of Penn State. So that's one of the reasons why you get numbers that are surprisingly low when you actually try to take a really careful and good look at economic impact reporting of that.
Well, then now when, and I don't know if you know this, again, going using the community, what has been the financial impact of COVID on the businesses? I know it's everywhere, but say specifically a town like State College.
Right. So I can't answer that specifically for State College. What we do know is that certain industries really have been decimated by this. One good example is this is the entire leisure and hospitality industry lost about 45% of its employment between February and April, right? So, February before things really kicked in, 2 months later in the full-blown COVID shutdowns, the leisure and hospitality sector lost 45% of its employment. And that sector includes hotels, it includes restaurants, it includes any type of entertainment, including theaters, and it includes spectator sports. So that is an example of at least one thing. And of course, Penn State lives on a lot of that, right? One of the reasons that State College exists in the way it does is providing entertainment and hospitality and leisure services to the students and their visitors. So that's an industry that's particularly important to college towns, again, because they draw in people from around the country who then spend money here. That's, again, a sector that's been probably the hardest hit sector of any sector out there. So that's one example of what we see nationwide that certainly applies to State College.
And I can confirm that Penn State students, alums, visitors do frequent the bars and restaurants in State College. I can confirm that for you.
Well, we can all confirm that. And again, the fact that you can confirm this happening, and of course we've seen some unfortunate stories here as the students have returned back to Penn State, but the fact that we can confirm that people going out to restaurants and bars, even when there's not a football game being played at the time, that's one of these examples of why football really isn't as big as what you might expect, because look at all the people going out and eating and drinking even without football. And so that's an example. The economic term is the substitution effect. Yeah, they're not spending money at the football game, but they are eating and drinking still and substituting their spending that they would be doing as part of a football afternoon for just other sort of activities that they're engaging
in. And again, also, there's the factor of the bars and restaurants where they have the different rules. And to be honest, I'm not even sure where we are at anymore in Pennsylvania. I think you have to eat a meal to have a drink. I'm not sure if you could you can't sit at the bar, 25% capacity, 50%. It's so confusing. I don't even know what the rules currently are. I'm sure I will have some listeners respond and tell me what they are. They always help educate me. Professor, could we redirect a little bit to the university itself? Well, you talked about $165 million. I'm going to use the word revenues that won't be coming in. And a lot of people confuse the words revenue and profit. That is money that is would normally be coming in. But on the other side, what is the where are they benefiting in the costs that get reduced to show the real number that is being lost? It's different at the collegiate level than at the professional level. At the professional level, the largest expense is personnel. It's the players. And if they're not playing the games, like in baseball, where they ended up playing 60 games, salaries were prorated. So that was their biggest expense. But in a college environment, how does that work?
Yeah, so this is really something where it's much harder for colleges and universities to cut their expenses compared to the pros. Again, most of the pro leagues in the United States, with the exception of Major League Baseball, has a very specific revenue sharing arrangement with their players union. So, and it's roughly 50%. So in all the big leagues other than Major League Baseball, 50 cents of every dollar that comes in has to be given back to the players in some way. And then they can all bicker and argue about whether there should be salary caps and, you know, what, you know, designated players and all these sort of things. But if the revenue goes down 50% in the NBA, in the NFL, in any of these places, it automatically reduces their expenses by not quite 50%, but at least, you know, that trickles down into their expense categories. That's not the case at any of the Power Five conferences. So what typically happens at a Power Five school, again, like Penn State, is the essential model that is being run is the university tells the athletic department, win as many games as you can for us without costing us any money out of our general revenues. That's pretty close to the kind of rule of thumb. No one is trying to generate profits. So the president of West Virginia University is not saying, hey, try to generate as much money as you can for the physics department or the economics department. The basic idea is be as successful as you can while not costing us any money. So at Penn State, for example, they generate about $165 million in revenue. The athletic department then turns around and essentially spends every dollar of that on things that they think are going to make the athletic program, and not just football, also all sorts of other athletics as well, that are going to make athletics in general successful, right? So the thing is that even though, we've had an explosion of income coming in, mainly because media rights have gone way up just since 2013, the amount of money Penn State is making on media rights has doubled. But even though they're getting $40 million more a year in media rights, their agreement with the university itself is not, oh, great, the university now has $40 million. It's the athletic department now has $40 million to spend to try to make their program more successful. And how do you spend that? You spend it on lavish dorms for the football players, for lavish locker room facilities. You spend them on the most expensive coaches you can find. You spend this on anything you can do again, and it actually becomes a little bit hard sometimes to figure out ways to spend that money. But again, it's all about spending the money that you bring in to generate further success. And every other Power Five program is doing exactly the same thing. So again, if you are a five-star recruit, you are being lavished with, look at all these great facilities we have for you, and they are throwing everything they can at you. I mean, except for the obvious thing, which is a paycheck, which is the way a normal business recruits employees, but obviously is not how college athletics at the Power Five works.
Bottom lining it for, let's use Penn State as an example, not having that $165 million of revenue coming in, what does it really cost them? Because there will be some reduced cost by not playing the games, by not putting them on.
Yeah, so that's going to be the real question. So how much of the money do you keep coming in even though you're not playing the games? Obviously, the ticket sales disappear, so you've got a $40 million hole there. There's a real question about how many of those contributions come in. I know that Penn State and every other university is desperately trying to have people keep their contributions coming in, even though they're not getting their place in line for purchasing a ticket, a season ticket as part of that. They're desperately trying to keep their negotiating agreements with, you know, Nike or Adidas or Under Armour or whoever they have there. But the bottom line is a place like Penn State is probably looking, without football in the fall, is probably looking at least $100 million hole in their budget. And there is not $100 million worth of expenses you can cut. Again, because you're paying almost nothing for your athletes. So there is, you can't cut their salaries. Lots of these coaches have contracts that very specifically set out what they are supposed to make that likely don't have pieces in there saying that if you don't play the games, you lose your money. Unlike the NBA, for example, had that specifically in their bargaining agreements. And so you've got a $100 million hole that it's not at all clear how you fill that. Now, at a place like Holy Cross, where I'm at, you know, we don't count on generating much revenue, and we run a $30 million deficit every year in our athletic program because our athletic program costs about $35 million a year, and we just don't generate much in the way of revenue. So we're actually in a much better space at Holy Cross than Penn State is, again, because we run a $35 million athletic program rather than a $165 million one. And, you know, not running the program, you know, not having travel, not having to hire as many trainers, not having to hire transportation and scheduling and things like that, it probably saves us more money than it costs us in ticket sales. But obviously, that's not at all the case at a Power Five conference.
Well, and that's why I thought that there would be a lot of the smaller schools canceling because they literally save money by doing that as opposed to the larger schools like Penn State. The other factor I did want to mention earlier was when you talk about the revenues coming in, have you ever worked on what are the indirect revenues that Penn State as a perennial top 10 team not only will get, you know, the direct money, but they'll get more contributions. They'll also get more applicants for the university. I remember a few years back, for example, I think it was Florida Gulf Coast made a very surprise run in the basketball tournament, and they all of a sudden got all these applications. It was a boom to the university. So the example of using your Minnesota, the fact that they had so much better a team last year, how much does that benefit the university indirectly? More contributions, more applicants? Have you ever measured that kind of thing?
Yeah, so there's actually an economic term for that. It's what's known as the Flutie effect, obviously named after Doug Flutie and his spectacular last-minute win back in, what, 1982 that kind of put Boston College on the map. So, I mean, it's really the term that is used is the Flutie effect. And we do see some Flutie effect. There are a couple caveats to the Flutie effect. So we do know that surprising runs to championships, both in football and basketball, do generate additional applications. It is important to note that all those additional applications tend to not lead to an actual better student body. And there's probably two reasons for that is you get a lot of shoppers, but not necessarily a lot of buyers, right? So you have someone who says, oh, I need to send out 8 applications to colleges. Here are the 5 I really want to go to, and I'm just going to throw out an extra 3 there because my mom and dad want me to apply to at least 7 places. Oh, and I guess I'll choose Florida Gulf Coast, or, oh, I'll choose Butler. I'll choose, Minnesota because of a nice run here. But we're never really planning on going there in the first place. The other thing is it may be that people who choose to go to a college solely based on a good March Madness performance by the team might not be the best college applicants in the pool in any given year. So we do see evidence of additional applications. We don't see a whole lot of evidence that the student body that comes in is particularly better in any sort of way when that happens. We also have some minimal evidence of increased donations, but again, not particularly. Again, the place where you really get lots of donations coming in is, a handful of donations from the really big donors, not one person who's a big college fan who then sends an extra $10 to their alma mater. That actually is nice, but it doesn't add up to much. And we don't see much evidence actually of significant increases in donations that come in after national championships in either football or in basketball. So there is that. But the last piece here is important and way harder to tease out. I don't know anyone who's done it particularly effectively, but how much of students going to Penn State is not whether they did well last year or not, but just because of the environment of having fun and big time college athletics as being something that attracts students in general, that's not tied in any particular way to whether you beat Minnesota last year or not, or whether you made a run to the Sweet 16. And that's much harder to disentangle. And I don't think anyone's been able to show it yet, because we can't tell on Penn State. Go to Penn State because it's got a reputation as an excellent academic school, and they've got great engineering programs, and they have great history of scholastic excellence, and it's the flagship institution of the state. Or is it because there's fun events on campus 7 Saturdays a year, and it's impossible to disentangle those, because both have been the reality for many, many years. And so, again, it's very hard to determine which of those things is driving a particular student to Penn State in any given year.
And I could understand that. I could tell you in my professional life, I can't tell you how many times the fact that I am a Penn State graduate has come into play. Can I directly say I got that job or I got that client because of it? Not sure, but it certainly didn't hurt me. I do know that. Last question for you, Professor. We've determined that there is pain that Penn State and every other university that's losing out on football this year is going to feel. The community, it's interesting to hear that it's not going to be quite as large an effect as some of us thought it would be. Both the university and the community do, in recognizing that they have these issues with no football along with the COVID. Are there things that either one of them can do going forward to help them out?
So here's one where I'm going to definitely say, I'm not that kind of doctor. But we do know some things. Is that I would say the one thing from the economic side is there's been a lot of people trying to say, we have to get the economy open, and we have to defeat COVID. Unfortunately, those are completely opposite things. Is that COVID will destroy the economy whether the economy is open or not. What we see is, there's no magic wand here that you can say, let's just open the economy because we don't want, we don't want to wreck it because of COVID. But unless we actually beat COVID into the ground, it doesn't matter whether we open our economy or not, because you're not going to be able to safely go to bars and restaurants, and people aren't going to go to bars and restaurants if they're not safe, or at least not in the numbers that you need to keep all the bars and restaurants and theaters and movie theaters and sporting teams keeping them open. So, you know, this is not a, you know, what should we do? Should we close the economy and beat COVID, or should we open the economy and save the economy? It's not an either or. You can't have the economy recover until COVID is completely under control. You know, I think that's what we are going forward. And unfortunately, it's pretty unpleasant. I'm much happier teaching in front of students. I like my classes. I like my students. I wish I could interact with them besides just on Zoom here for the rest of the semester. And obviously, I think back to my college experience in my last, year or two in high school, and, you know, the term social distancing was not not something that I would say defined my college experience at all. And I do feel bad for the students. That being said, there's no going back to normal life until COVID is under control, which means that, we have to have very non-normal life until it is.
All right. That is going to be it for this segment. Victor Matheson, PhD professor of economics at Holy Cross. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a delight. And you guys, at least the one good thing about COVID is you lucked out this fall, and that my Gophers aren't going to beat you again this fall.
You ended just the way you started it. I love it. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Keystone Kickoff from KeystoneSportsNetwork.com.